I spread a song so you can sing along with a special guest star
or two.
You like to sing and dance, and this podcast by chance explores musicals for you.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Life's But a Song, a podcast that likes to live in the land of musicals. I'm your host, John, and with me today is a returning guest who we're doing a series of episodes with him. It's Roland Ruzanek, everyone.
Woo! Yay! Thank you. Thanks for having me back. Appreciate it.
How you doing?
Good. Here we are in the golden age of movie musicals again.
I know. And we're here today to talk about A Star is Born from 1954. Yes, this is the first remake of three, maybe four, of the movie A Star is Born, which is what Roland is going to be doing for the next, over the course of this year. We're going to have him do the other three sequels, maybe four.
Glutton for Punishment.
You picked them, so.
I sure did. Well, no, because I'm always fascinated by adaptations and like, I'm always fascinated by like how you go from a book to a musical. And I always like to read the book and then see the show and read the script and see how they did it. So this is fascinating to me and see how it evolves, because it's the same story over and over again. Like it never changes.
The only thing that changes is the profession, really, which we'll get it. We'll get into that in the future.
Oh,
episodes.
We'll get that in the next few. Yeah.
Later. So the 1954 Star is Born, the screenplay for this was written by Moss Hart. It was directed by George Cukor.
Cukor, yeah.
And according to IMDb, a film star helps a young singer and actress find fame, even as age and alcoholism send his career on a downward spiral. I've seen this movie before. I know you have seen this movie before. This is so good.
Do you like it?
I love this movie.
I do too.
I mean, spoiler alert, this is my version of this movie. I want to mention though that here at the top, so A Star is Born, the original, was in 1937 with Janet Gaynor and Frederick March playing Esther and Norman respectively. They didn't change the names. The only thing that they added into the 54 movie is music.
Yeah.
Because
isn't there a version of the story that predates this version that it's a looser adaptation? I read somewhere that people debate that there is another movie that yet this is in fact based on.
What do you mean?
But I couldn't find
A Star is Born, the 1937 one, is based on something?
Yes. And it's called something else. But I could not find it. And I remember someone like telling me this, an old movie fan that I would, I have lots of friends who are old movie people here in LA. And I remember going, well, what was it? And he told me the name. I didn't write it down. And I thought, oh shit, I've lost what it was. So I'll have to do some homework and see if I can find it again. Like at what price Hollywood or something like that.
Oh, yes.
Am I close?
Yeah, hold on. Let me do.
At what price fame? Like something like that?
What price Hollywood? It was.
Oh, I was right.
Yeah, it is a 1932 pre-code drama directed by George Cukor.
Oh!
That's
no way.
Right. No, I remember this because for my other podcast, Movie Deja Vu, we were going to do all of them, and the one
here we are,
the one that I was alluding to as like the fourth remake, well technically it's the third remake, is The Bodyguard,
right?
Yeah, so
but
this one, my
we
God.
Could do The Bodyguard as an addendum,
okay,
yeah, at the end and talk about it. Yeah, go.
This movie though is so fascinating because of, like, I was reading the IMDb while watching the movie because I was like, I ran out of time, and I was reading that finding their Norman for this was kind of difficult.
Oh really?
Because they gave it to, according to the IMDb trivia, so grain of salt everyone, but it sounds like they tried everyone out, and people had different reasoning for not wanting to do it. Some of them being like, I'm still in my prime. Why would I want to play an aging actor? There's a few, though, that didn't want to do it because of Judy Garland, because of her,
No, because she was
because
such
of,
a problem at that point.
because she was a problem. And that's sad for me to say, because like she is doing the reverse in this movie, where she has somebody who's going through, who's being problematic and everything, and she's living that character. And it's
Yeah, she's
so,
living the life of the other one of yeah.
she's living the life of Norman. Yes.
Yeah, in real life, but on camera, she's so good and
It
her
is.
performance is so good.
I made a promise to myself to not go on my soapbox about the mistreatment of Judy Garland in this time period, but I think I'm going to
No,
have to go
go.
on my soapbox for a little bit, because if the studio heads did not give her the pills in the first place, she wouldn't have. And that's an interesting thing too. This movie is about Hollywood and like the darker side of Hollywood, but still a
Right.
little glamorized. However, they didn't show, I feel like this movie and Valley of the Dolls need to like come together and be like, no. In this time period, they were giving women pills and
They were drugging
alcohol,
them,
and they were
outright
doing
drugging
all
them.
of them.
Yes,
Yeah.
yes. And a pill to wake up, and a pill to go to sleep, and a pill instead of eating, and a pill for the, and it was like
And a
they
pill
were
to lose weight
on
because
amphetamines.
you're still too big and all that. And you're like, what? And then a pill
And Judy is
for your
like the
face and a
size of
pill.
a child. Like she's
Yeah.
tiny.
It is insane. Like when she's, what's that number? Is it It's a New
20.
World? No,
What?
Someone at Last. When
Oh,
she's
when.
home in her rehearsal costume, as she calls it,
Yeah.
and you
And
see
she does the
her.
big number. She does the number for him. She shows him the number.
Yeah, but you see her
Yeah.
legs and they're like toothpicks.
I completely agree. It was fascinating because I actually didn't know that this was where she started to be problematic. And I
This
watched
isn't
it
the
going.
start of it, though. This is
It wasn't the start of it?
no.
Where did it start? Do you know?
She did a movie with Gene Kelly a few years prior to this called Summer Stock, and
Oh,
in
Summer
that
Stock.
one,
Yeah.
definitely she was quote unquote problematic. And I'm sad that we have to say it that way, but that's how it came across when she has a drug addiction and also a mental illness, because she was a child actor, and child actors are a little fucked up. Like,
Especially then, because you know, when you're a
yes.
kid and you're still forming and they're telling you you're fat, and she's like, no, she wasn't fat. She was just, she had a large head. She was oddly shaped. It wasn't, she just wasn't like long and lean, you know, genetically speaking. You look at her and you're just like, this girl was lovely and perfect, and they fucked her head up.
Yeah, so I know in Summer Stock, Gene Kelly was definitely like a friend with her.
He was.
Yeah, like he helped her out a lot
Oh,
in
good.
that one. But I feel
Is
like it
that
was even,
before or after the pirate? Do you know?
think it was after. So like I feel like, and that is 1950 Summer Stock. So I feel like in the 40s is when, like literally right after Wizard of Oz, I think is when they were like, take some pills. Here are the dolls.
Wait, no, I think it was during. Because didn't they? I think
Oh,
during.
yes.
During was when they were like, you're too fat, so you need to like take this and eat less. And, you know, they would like deny her food, I heard. I mean, I don't know.
I don't, I'm
There's,
not a Judy expert. I just
yeah.
know that,
And
like,
there's
at some
historians who
point,
know, but I know it was, from what I remember hearing, it was during this, during Wizard of Oz, which, well, of course, you and I did together. And
yes.
it's interesting because I watched this film. And I thought, this is Judy now as a mature performer, and she's so good in this.
Yes, but there is some moments when you can unfortunately tell that she's drugged out of her mind.
Oh, I would say there's at least two I could identify that I was like,
Yeah,
uh-oh, she looks like she's high.
there's a few of them, and I was reading that George Cukor, the director, apparently in, is it Lose That Long? I think it they only referenced when she was breaking down, and I think it's in between lose That Long Face, when she's talking to what's his butt, the head of the studio. Oliver, I believe the character's name is.
When she's talking to this head of the studio, I'm
Yeah.
blanking.
So when Norman, when yeah, she's talking to Oliver about Norman being in the sanitarium.
Oh, yes.
Apparently George Cukor like drove her to like a breaking point.
Oh.
So
And
like
this is
we're
not the first time he'd worked with her.
no, and this is not the first time he's done this too to his actors. So like I mean it's great, it's a great delivery and
It
everything,
sure
but
is. Yeah.
she's you can tell Judy's in a fragile state at this time.
Yeah.
Like, come
But
on, everyone.
I also have a theory. Like I read the biography of Kim Stanley, which not a lot of people know who she is. She was a Broadway actress and she did a few films, and she was basically, if you watch, there's a documentary series called Broadway the Golden Age, and all these actors basically went and watched her in Bus Stop and watched her in other performances, and they were always like, she was the best actress I ever saw. And she had a downfall that was very similar in the sense that people, her techniques and what she did as an actor and other people around her that she worked with kind of drove her a little insane. And I think it's really a sign of that period where like people would invest in the method, the Strasberg method, and they would do all these things, extreme things to get the performance out of them. But it would sort of make
With
you lose your
them.
mind.
Yeah.
And we found healthier ways to do that since then. And I just think it's really interesting because a lot of women were victimized in this era. And then I would say Judy's era, what I'm talking about. But it's so interesting to then watch the film and it's the complete reverse, the
I
story-wise.
you I have a perfect flat when we get there, so
Okay,
let's put a
later.
pin in
Yeah,
this.
yeah, yeah.
I do want to give a little bit of trivia, by the way.
Go.
Let's change subjects a little bit. So on this podcast, I am obsessed with this one background extra. Her name is Bess Flowers.
No. I
She
wish I
has.
knew that when I watched it, I would have looked for her.
I can never find her
Oh.
because she's always uncredited.
Okay.
But she has over 900 titles on her IMDb page
Fuck out of
that
here.
she's credited but uncredited too.
Right,
And in
right.
this one, Bess plays an Academy Award attendee. So she's
Oh, but that could be like, but Academy Award attendee, that's like someone in that banquet
in that
scene,
banquet. Yeah.
which is like hundreds of people.
Yes. Yeah. But she's up, but like, I'm obsessed with her because she is I can't find anyone else who has so many titles under
IMDb
their
credits.
name, under their credits. So I feel like, we need to not only investigate a little bit more on the history of Judy Garland, but get into a little Bess Flowers. And I want to
I
like,
love it.
I
All
keep trying
right.
to put her in the forefront of these classic Hollywood episodes if
But
she's
do
in
you know
them.
what she looks like?
Yeah, if you go to her IMDb page, there is. And if you go to my Instagram, I have a whole highlight of stories
A best.
dedicated to Bess Flowers
Okay.
where you see her picture, and I put in whatever movie she's in and give her the credit.
Yeah.
But there's another fun little thing about this. So the character Danny in this, the character's name is Danny McGuire. This is the third time this character's name has appeared on the podcast. The other two times were both played by Gene Kelly.
Oh, that's so weird. In what movies?
In CoverGirl and in Xanadu, he plays a character, Gene Kelly plays a character named Danny McGuire.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So I found it fascinating. I was like, was this supposed to be Gene Kelly's role? What's going on?
Oh, what if? What if? So Danny is her like friend
Is her friend that is
that basically
clearly
is
in love
like,
with
don't be
her.
late to the, and he's the one that's like, come with us, don't be late on the bus at the beginning, right?
Yeah,
And then
so
takes the bus and leaves.
he's the one who's clearly in love with her in the beginning because they are part of that band, and then somehow she gets him a job in Hollywood, question mark?
Right, which we, there's a lot of like weird plot jumps, which I think have to do with what was cut from the first edit of the movie. Like,
Yes,
you know about
so
the edits, right? So,
here we are.
okay.
Great. I was going to get there. So the movie originally was 3 hours long, and then
No longer.
it was
It was like
longer
3:30.
than
It was something like 3 hours and 30 minutes long. They were outraged.
holy shit.
This
Yeah.
is before he turned it in.
Yeah, it was it oh, crap, I'm not even gonna find it on the trivia page. Yeah, so then I think George cut it down to 3 hours. And then
Yes, and
from
he turned it
there,
in at 3 something, at 3 hours, and they were like, no.
the studio took out parts where George Cooker, the director, was on another project at the time, so he wasn't even involved in this.
He didn't even know
So
they cut it. He was so mad.
they cut it to 2 hours and 30 minutes, and then there was an uproar about it because apparently the 3 hour one was well regarded. The test audiences for that
Yes.
were high praising it, and the studios wanted to get an extra showtime in there. So that's why they cut it to
Right.
2 and a half hours. And so in the 80s,
84. Yep.
Yeah, 1984. Someone, I can't remember his name, but you, the listener, can do a little research on that yourself. Found the soundtrack, not just the singing, but the spoken lines, I should say, the dialogue for the majority of those cut scenes, and added in either production stills or, if there was any footage. I don't think there was. There may have been a few frames here or there, but it sounds like when the studio cut it down, they burned everything,
Most
except
likely.
for the soundtrack,
Yeah.
obviously.
Yeah.
So, what in '84 they added it in with the production stills and everything, and I have to say, I kind of like it,
I thought it
like.
was interesting, yeah, because it adds a sort of a cool element to the movie.
So a theme of this movie is that show business is just that. It's a business, like, that deals with entertainment. And you're seeing that the business comes first in a lot of the instances. Like, they're constantly working. She's getting a bigger name for herself. Libby is really only thinking about the studio. Oliver at some points thinks about the studio, but then he's like, wait, these are people. Let me think of them as people. So what I found about the production stills, though, it felt like paparazzi, or it felt like a snapshot of a memory, which I know that's a little literal, but it did
No,
feel
I
like
feel this. No, I felt the same way. Like it felt like it was sort of a wonderful poetic transitional se like sequence that was sort of pulled from the headlines, and or maybe like because the way it was like sepia toned, like it's like something that they pulled out of a newspaper to move you to the next big moment in the story. Like I really liked it. At first I had was sort of like, wait, what's happening? And then the more it happened, I actually looked it up as I was watching and went, oh, okay, got it. This is the footage that went
No,
back in.
so I remember seeing this before, and I guess I just blacked that part out, but I do remember it being like, oh yeah, they do that, where
You may have seen the original cut of the movie, because I know I did.
No, I saw the 3 hour long one because I bought it on DVD, and that's all they do these
Got
days.
it. Okay.
Well, sorry,
No,
a few
I
years
saw it in
ago
a
I
print.
have it on DVD, and
Yeah.
that's
Yeah.
what they did. That's the
Yeah.
only print that's out there now.
Yeah, now, yeah. 'Cause I had seen it in a theater in LA, and I remember like I was young, and I remember sitting through it and thinking it was really good, and then seeing it in mid to late 80s and being like, what's all this? And then I had to go and like ask around why there was this like still footage in it. Like, and they're like, oh, they restored it. It was put back in. I didn't like, I didn't know.
It felt just so. This movie feels so grounded in reality, which is very weird for this time period because it's not.
How so? What do you mean by that?
I guess because Judy was going through it, she kind of understood what was
Oh,
happening, but like it didn't feel like a lot of real movies in the 50s, if you know what I mean. And I'm
Yeah, I
using air
do.
quotes around that.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like they were acting, capital A acting. It felt like it was an honest conversation that was happening, or like, I get it that they glamorize Hollywood a little bit in this, but like it kind of did feel like this is one of our secrets.
Well,
We're letting
yeah,
you
and
in.
I also felt, well, I felt that way too, that there was something about it that although it was a glitzy 50s musical, there were moments where I felt like it was like more realistic than others. In that, there were moments where, like, I live in LA now. I live on the East, on the West Coast, and I know it pretty well and would see these landmarks that were in that movie just shot on the street. Like they, they pulled up and I was like, oh my God, that is still there. And just seeing the cars the way they actually were on the streets and seeing, it was just really all the like location stuff is accurate and sort of gritty and dirty. It's not like a back lot that's all cleaned up, and which is unusual, I feel like. And also
And
like
even like I think the makeup was toned down, and
it feels like that.
they were using some sort of new technology, or new for Warner Brothers. It was CinemaScope that they finally got
Yeah,
the use
CinemaScope.
of, and apparent like they George Cukor was told all the rules on how to film on CinemaScope, and then he threw them out the window and said, "I'm gonna do whatever the fuck I want." And so all of them broke all the rules, apparently, but I don't know what they are because it looked great.
What I really loved about this movie was from the jump, it is beautiful to look at. In an insider show busy kind of way, you see costumes, and then all of a sudden you see like people backstage and they look different. Like it's not like they're wearing their costume like in the showbiz moment, but then they walk off stage and look exactly the same and they're just as polished. They're a little rougher. And it feel I think that might be what you sense is that they really had a touch of like, no, you're when you go off camera, you change your clothes.
Like
Like
when she sings "The Man That Got Away," they're in a nightclub of sorts, but it's not glamorized. It's
no.
dark. It's
And the chairs are turned up and it's barely, and it's really like, it's rough looking. I mean, it's still Hollywood 50s code, beautiful on film, rough looking.
Right, but it's a little more like, oh, this like it I don't know how to describe it beside it saying that it just felt grounded in
Yeah, I
reality.
agree. No, I feel the same. I mean, I have to tell you, just struggled with how creepy I found. What's the actor's name that played Norman? Oh my God, I'm blanking on his name. Oh geez, what's
James
his?
Mason.
James Mason. There are moments where he's just outright creepy to me, and his smile is like that's a serial killer smile. Like he's so yucky to me. And I think that's probably good.
So he's British, but I
Yeah.
was just
He's a
like,
wonderful actor. I'm not saying
he is,
he's
but I was just
bad.
like, your American accent, or are you trying to have an American accent? Because it's not sounding like it.
No, I don't think so. Because remember, at that time, they also had that fake made-up mid-Atlantic accent that they were teaching everybody to do. And so he gets away with it, I think, because he's British, but like trying to tone down the accent. And I bought it. I mean, like I was sort of like, yeah, this is I know he was a Brit, but like but I'm saying the look of him is so creepy. And I always was like, why does she fall for this guy? He's so gross. And
He kind of sounded like Michael York to me. I'm not gonna lie
a little
at
bit, yeah.
points,
I see
but
it. Yeah.
yeah. So okay, great. Because I don't know when they started dating. Like it felt like
Right.
when
Zero to
they meet at
60.
the beginning,
Yeah.
she's trying to do the whole, showbiz. Let's cover this up and let's not have him look like a fool on stage and everything because he's wasted. But from there, I was just like, when did you fall in love? When
Right. Because
all.
you start the movie and he shows up on that amazing that whole opening sequence in the Shrine Auditorium where they're doing the show or whatever show they're doing to me is amazing because it's just so layered. There's like so much happening, visually there. And then he shows up and he's drunk out of his mind and he's a total jerk. He ruins her number, shows up on stage, and she still falls for the guy. I would have been like, this dude is a jerk.
Well, she says that he looks at her the way that nobody else has. And
Yeah, sure, whatever. I know.
that's like after Gotta Have Me Go With You, which is the song that she sings, and then The Man That Got Away, they have like a conversation that whole night, which I'm not sure if it means that they had sex, but I'm not saying that, but maybe I am. But then
It
he,
feels like that.
yeah, and then he tries to find her, and I'm just sitting here. When he wants as obsessively looking for her and then gets her that screen test, I'm just like, how many times has this happened in your career? Because
That's what I mean. There's a creepiness to his, like, first of all, his look, but also his behavior that I was so like, God, I don't know. I don't necessarily buy how her falling for him. I just don't buy it. There's no heat there. There's no chemistry. They have zero chemistry.
No, it's a weird like mentor mentee, but also
Yes, here we are, Phantom of the Opera. Like, my dolly.
And also a little Stockholmy, like
Yeah, maybe, 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 maybe. That actually feels correct to me.
because
Yeah.
like when
Especially later in the film, you're like, she's so in love with him later. You're like, really? He's
because
terrible.
in It's a New World, which is the one that they where he proposes to her, I'm just like,
I love
what?
that moment. That's probably my favorite moment in the whole movie.
I mean, yes, it's great, but I'm like, wait, when did you start dating though? I thought this was a whole like friendship, courtship thing or something.
I really was confused by the speed of their relationship, but I wrote it off to potential edit problems and maybe like they had to cut out the sequences where they really court or something. But also then later I thought, you know, I just think they just didn't have chemistry. So if you don't have chemistry, you can't ever really make it work unless you explicitly show them going on dates. Because you
True.
could have had it could have been there the whole time.
Or at least kiss. They were allowed
Something.
to kiss before they got married, I hope.
Yeah. Or just like one secret little like smooch. And she calls him like when she does the makeup test and she comes out on the balcony and she's dressed and he's like and she doesn't call him Norman. She goes, Mr. Main, Mr. Main.
Yes.
And I was like, didn't you already like sleep together at this point? Like, what's happening?
So then when that happens and he helps her out and he's like, I think we reached the status of you calling me Norman or whatever the line is. I feel like he needed to like kiss her on the cheek or something.
Something.
Just so we
Something.
can be like, okay, not only are you allowed to break formal, social etiquette, but
Yeah.
now there's a little love or
But
something.
again, maybe there was things that like were cut out that helped it along, and maybe that's a code thing where they can't in quotes, air quotes, show them kissing before Mayor. I don't
Then
know.
give her a snuggle or
Or
something. Just
something, or just like a really good,
affection, in other
like a
words.
heated, like stare, like a long, prolonged stare into each other's eyes, and like, you know, something, because it just went out. It's just like, wait, they're gonna marry now. But I have to go back to that moment and talk about it for a second because it is so clever. It is so charming that she's in the studio recording and it's in the middle of like a musical break and the song. And she goes running over to Norman, who's sitting on a set piece of stairs and they're talking and nobody can hear them. And then all of a sudden, like the sound guy sees it. So he tells the boom operator to move the boom mic over their heads. And only the people in the recording booth can hear. I'm just, it is utterly charming. It's,
They were doing a lot of things in this movie that I was
yes.
just like, that's brilliant.
It's Cukor at his finest. Like, amazing, amazing work. Like, like
Like
it.
the use this sound, how sound was in this movie, where which one was it? Was it Someone at Last, or it was Someone at Last, where he gets her to sing it a cappella, basically. And I'm like, oh, that's a like that's that I like it. It's interesting because you've got we're hearing all this big band stuff, but I think that's another thing too that helped me with this whole grounded in reality where it's like I'm just gonna sing now and there is no music behind me because that doesn't happen in real life when you're with your partner or with a
You're just going
friend
to
or
sing to him.
something and you're just gonna sing, there is no magic musicians that show up that know whatever you're going to sing and can
And play the
harmonize
music
and play the
perfectly
music
for you. Yeah,
perfectly. Yeah,
yeah,
no, that
yeah.
doesn't happen in real life.
And
So.
so much of this movie, I mean, it is rely it's so reliant on Judy's performing songs and numbers, and the numbers are splashy, big Technicolor, spectacles to have a moment that's just little and quiet and, showing a range, a stillness in some ways, to have this like unaccompanied piece of music is stunning. It's stunning.
But then we have The Man That Got Away.
Is that your favorite in the show? Is that it?
The torch song of all torch songs.
I forgot that that was in this. And I realize that this happens
Oh, how
every time I watch
could
this movie
you?
where I go, oh yeah, this is from this. I forget this from this.
How could you forget
No,
that
it's a weird like
fact?
memory block because I don't think of it as being from anything. And then I watch it and go, oh no, it's from this. This is where it was introduced. I forget that. Yeah.
It's perfection. It
There's a
is.
lot of perfect musical moments in this movie. I have to say, Jude, that one particularly is sort of jaw-droppingly amazing.
And you said that there is a lot of spectacle with this, but this one is one that is just them hanging out, and
That's what's so beautiful about it.
yeah, and
Yeah.
it and it's then they have it like five times throughout the movie. They have it at the nightclub. There's, well, not five times. I think I can only count three. There's the one where Norman brings Oliver in and is playing it outside the window as like a hint that he should hire her.
Also one of my favorite moments in the movie where he's like badgering Oliver, the head of the studio, and basically like talking to him about his fucking dressing room, and he's like, you brought me here to talk about your dressing room. And then he opens the door and there comes Judy's voice wafting in, and it takes him a good minute, and then finally, like halfway through the scene, he goes, okay, I get it. I see why I'm here. It's to hire the girl.
And then the music is played at the end credits.
Yeah.
So this is supposed to, I think this is supposed to be the song of the movie.
Clearly. Oh, because it's almost ironic because it's not that he got away, she got him. Look what it did to her and look what it did to him.
Well, yes and no, 'cause the man, I think what happens, I think it's that the man got away. Because, it's all toxic masculinity and the fragile male ego within Danny is what took over. So the romantic side, the man that she
You mean
allegedly
Norman?
fell in
You mean
love,
Norman? You mean
Norman,
Norman?
yes,
Yeah, yeah,
sorry.
yeah, yeah.
I don't know why I said Danny.
That's okay. No, I just wasn't following for a second.
Yeah. So, like, Norman, she allegedly fell in love with him for, I guess he was a romantic or he had. He was lively and everything, but then, his alcoholism and drug dependency and mental illness, let's call a spade,
Well, yeah.
took over. So the man himself became a shell. And so the man did go away.
Layers, metaphors,
Layers.
deepness. Yeah, she even says what I love about that scene where he proposes to her in the recording studio is that her response, we don't hear the conversation until they play it back on the record that they were pressing. And the response that she says is, no, you drink too much. I'm not marrying you.
Yeah,
And
and then
she
she's
knows.
like, fine, I guess I'll marry you now that it's public. And
Yeah, and it's such a funny reversal because you go, wait, no, stick with the original idea.
stick to your guns. The one that we haven't talked about at all yet is the Born in a Trunk medley. How
Oh.
did you feel about this?
John, this is one thing you should know about me. If you do a giant multi-songed sequence in an old MGM musical, I'm going to eat it with a golden spoon.
So,
I fucking love it.
here's the thing.
It's super racist, though. There's a
Yes.
lot of racism in this movie that I found jarring, which, of course,
Yes.
wasn't racist in their minds in the 50s. And to us now, it's horrifically racist. We'll get to those in a minute, but.
Yeah, I wrote for when Swanee happened, I wrote down at least they hired people of color to be part of this.
At least you go,
At
what about a
least.
couple of black children in the background? Oh, look, there's a lady paying a mammy. How rude, like
Yeah.
But
But
it's
at least
what
they
they
didn't put
did.
her in blackface, so that's
You
an
know what?
improvement, right?
Again, forgot that they didn't because I was waiting for it.
However, they kind of did because
Essentially do. They, I mean, she played, yeah, it's so
they added
hard.
the white underneath her eye to make her eyes bigger.
And
Her
they probably, didn't they
makeup
put
for
Tanner,
Lose That
maybe Tanner
Long
makeup?
Face is boof. But Born in a Trunk medley.
I enjoy the work. That's what I mean to say, that because it's beautifully staged, it's beautifully designed, but the content, they're so problematic.
It's
So problematic.
also 15 minutes of the movie, which is a
Oh,
movie within the movie.
right, which is hilarious. You're like, it's
And it just feels so long. It feels, I mean, I love it too.
is.
And it's Judy singing and she sounds great and all that, but like, it's so long.
I think they made the mistake of thinking that the audience needed all Judy all the time, and everything was, like I said earlier, reliant on Judy's performance of these big splashy numbers. And you know, it's delightful to watch if you set aside, you know, the issues of racism and, you know, stealing and cultural whoops, I can't say it, cultural appropriation. It's just interesting because the work is still great work in spite of all that.
The one that you were talking about is Lose That Long Face, which has the two black children in it, and
That's in the
that's
middle
it.
of the sequence, right? That's the in like
That's the
in
tap
period.
dancing. No, that's later,
It is?
when
Okay.
she's tapping. When she with
Gosh.
the tap
They all
dance
mush
number.
together in my brain. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but well, because this movie's 3 hours long, so you're like, I
Wait.
remember the highlights.
Wait, so is the Born in a Trunk sequence where it ends with the chorus, with all the choristers have red hair?
Yes.
Okay, what explain why? Why it? What is that? Why is that a thing?
I got nothing. Red was a very important color in this movie.
Yes, it
That's all I
was. I
got.
kept noting it. I'm like, more
Oh,
red, red
because
everywhere,
Born in a
red
Trunk.
stage.
Born in a Trunk, everything is red.
So
Everything
weird.
is red. Within this, whatever this movie is that she's doing, she comes out from a red curtain and there's red roses behind her and her
And it's
pants
all
have,
red, red on red, yeah.
and there's red on red on red. And then we have flashback moments where there's not a lot of red, but then later in the movie A Star Is Born, when we do Lose That Long Face, she's in red, the two little ki kids are in red,
Yes.
and there's red thrown about the set, but everyone else is in gray. And I was like, what
There's
the
also, was noting at like really predominant red designs from the beginning of the film. Like if you watch it again,
the
just in
giant red flowers that they have in Judy and the two
yes,
men.
but even before that, like when there's a crowds going into the Shrine Auditorium, red has accented everywhere. And I was like, that's got to be intentional because
You
it's
know what I
nuts.
noticed this time around, by the way?
Everywhere.
You want to know what I noticed this
Tell
time?
me.
In the very, very beginning, when they're talking to one of the celebrity ladies, she stops by the radio platform and she's talking. The female reporter, don't know her name, I can't remember it, it's not important, has only one earring on.
Oh, hilarious. I didn't notice that. Maybe she
And
lost it and they was like, go anyway, just roll, just roll.
it's a big ass earring too, and you're
No.
like, okay, so I know that like nowadays in 2024 to have like different jewelry is a thing, and
Sure.
it's yeah, but in
Not in the
1950,
50s.
but in 1954, like you, and especially at an event, like a capital E event, you would have
That's
every
crazy. Now I have to like watch the opening
just
again.
watch the opening. Don't worry about the rest of the movie. Oh well, Emma, unless you want to watch the rest of the movie, I'm not going to tell
You
you
know
what to do
what?
with your life. But
This is definitely a movie I would watch as like put it on in the background and look up every once in a while because it's so long. But like when the numbers come on, it is so enjoyable to me to see how like crazy designed it. I mean, there's so many wonderful things in spite of the hugely problematic racism that shows up,
oh,
even at one point where she's playing like a
yeah.
Chinaman. And you're like,
Oh.
no, stop it.
Oh, the that is
And
that
she
is
puts
someone
on a
at last.
lampshade. Oh,
That is someone at
God,
last
it's
when they well, so first they do American in Paris. And I was like, they
pretty
call it
famous.
an American in Paris. And I was like, what? Wait, what? And there's a moment too when they're putting up a billboard for Esther, who becomes Vicky
Vicky
Lester.
Lester.
When they put up Vicky's poster, there's an old Norman billboard or an old billboard for a picture Norman was in. They take off, and apparently that's a real movie title as well. For one of, and it's one of the actors who said no to playing Norman.
No, like just digging at him, just like you.
Now, wait, let me see if I can, let's see if I can find it. Hold on. I wanna, because on the IMDb trivia, there's all these things about so when Matt Libby dictates the cancellation resignation of Norman Maine's contract, there's a theater marquee featuring Black Legion starring Norman Maine. Black Legion 1937 starred Humphrey Bogart, one of the actors who turned down the role of Norman Maine. That is from IMDb trivia, everyone.
Interesting.
There is also a cameo from the musical director of this movie in the movie,
I didn't know.
at the party scene, I think it was when they were going to watch a film at their house. You remember this moment? Matt Libby says, "Hey Ray, great score, the best."
Oh, that's the musical director.
That's Ray Heindorf, the musical
Oh, that's
director.
really cool.
So yeah, and this movie. But
I
like,
love.
how do you feel about them though? Saying like an American Paris or Black Legion, I feel like there may have been other pictures that they said that were real. How do you feel about that?
I think it's fun because it puts it in a time. Like it galvanizes it to a certain time. It makes it. I enjoy that. I think it's really fun because it also shows that they all kind of knew each other. Everyone's connected. It's all like, we think of these as separate entities, but the reality is they all knew each other. They all worked together. They probably were working on, projects, running back and forth to different things that we didn't realize they were all working on at the same time. And no, I think it's great. To me, I enjoy that immensely.
I want to go back to me saying that I like how this movie is grounded, because now I have an answer for you. I
Go.
have a real answer. It made me think of Jacques Demy
Oh,
and the young girls and umbrellas, where he took a pedestrian conversation
Right.
and put it to music. So like a lot of these conversations that they're having are very pedestrian, very of the business and everything. So that's why I like it, because it's real. I also, don't get me wrong, I like the batshit crazy movies I've done on this podcast as well.
Sure.
So, but like, there's something about this one that I guess the studio made it a higher stake because of Judy, and because we all know the history of Judy, and there's that fine line with life imitating art, imitating life. At this time period, it wasn't only Judy Garland who was a quote unquote problem. There were a lot of other stars, so let it be known.
Yeah.
But because
She just gets
this,
blamed a lot, I think, because
and, but,
people
and because of
know.
this, she's the star of this movie, where she's not the character, she's not playing the character going through all this. It's still, it hits home a little bit, or it hits the fandom a little bit. And like, what's also interesting is that you see moments where she's out in public, especially at the end, and you have to remember that actors are people, celebrities are people too. The funeral moment where she wants to just leave the church quietly because she's burying her husband, but then somebody ripped her veil off, which apparently happened to Elizabeth Taylor years later, by the way.
It did. It was
But
really funny.
it's like, these are people. Like, treat them like people sometimes, you know? God, wow. Didn't expect the conversation to go this way. Do you have anything else you want to talk about before we get into Shark and Fin?
I have to just point out that I said this already, I think, but I want to go back to it a little bit, that I just get such a kick out of seeing all the locations that still exist in Los Angeles that they shot at, even down to like the fact that there are oil rigs in the middle of like on Sunset Boulevard, or which are
Yeah.
gone now, but they were absolutely there. And there are still a bunch in Los Angeles that you see. And like the fact that there's a moment, I think they've stopped the car and Judy gets out to throw up because she's so nervous. And she does it like at the base of an oil rig,
Yeah.
pumping oil. And I was like, oh my God, that's wild. Because there's some places like close to the LA airport where you drive by oil rigs that are still there and that have been there since the 30s and they're still producing oil. So it's kind of neat just to see all these locations. And I love the idea of seeing, of taking a trip back in time and seeing what, you know, LA looked like in the 50s and, you know, all those places that are mostly gone. But, you know, you go, oh yeah, I like when I was a kid, my parents would come down from Santa Barbara to LA, and there some of those were still there in the late 70s, early 80s, and it was just neat. That was neat to me.
So I do want to say one more fun fact. Well, not really. It's not that much fun, but it is a fact about this movie is that it was nominated for six Academy Awards. It didn't win any of them.
No.
Judy Garland and
James
James
Mason.
Mason were both nominated. And it's interesting because in the 1937 movie, those actors were nominated as well.
Oh, interesting.
Janet Gaynor and crap, what's his name?
I don't know his name. Yeah, I should watch it.
Janet Gaynor and Frederick March
Oh, Frederick March. Okay.
were nominated. Judy lost to Grace Kelly for The Country Girl.
Okay.
Oh, they're okay. So while I'm here at the this is the 1955 Academy Awards. Grace Kelly won for The Country Girl. Judy Garland was nominated for A Star Is Born. Dorothy Dandridge was nominated for Carmen Jones.
Oh my.
Jane Wyman was nominated for The Magnificent Obsession, and Audrey Hepburn was nominated for Sabrina. So
Oh my God.
this was a tight year.
Yes. Jeez, oh,
And
Carmen, such a good movie too.
James Mason was nominated for Best Actor. Marlon Brando is the one who won for On the Waterfront.
Oh, okay.
Bing Crosby was nominated for The Country Girl. Dan O'Hurley was nominated for Robinson Crusoe. And Humphrey Bogart, was nominated for The Caine Mutiny. So
K Mutiny Court Martial, right?
it's just
It
called The
just says
Caine
K
Mutiny
Mutiny. Oh, maybe that's the play. Maybe I'm confusing
from
something.
1954.
Oh, I also really find fascinating that I don't know why this stuck out to me, that in the banquet for the Oscars, because it wasn't, you know, a show, they called it the Oscars banquet, luncheon or whatever. You notice Judy is the only person in a really dark color, like in a navy dress when everyone else is wearing gold, literally like lamé and silver and pale pinks. And she, so I was like, oh, that's interesting.
That's
And
interesting
then
that
she,
she stands out in that respect, because then there's
yeah.
moments, like in that one song,
Where she's the
"Losing
only
That
person
Long
not in
Face,"
red,
where
right? Yeah.
she's the only one in red and everyone else is
Yeah.
in gray, and you're
Yeah.
like,
Yeah.
"Wow."
And then another time she's like dressed like a hobo and everyone's dressed like, it's
That's the
interesting.
one.
I
Oh
also,
no! That's Born in, or is that Born in a Trunk that you're
I think
thinking
that's Born
of?
in a Trunk, the end of Born in a Trunk, where she's got
Yeah.
little plaid pants on. And I was like, she looks like a child. Like, that's the moment where you go, when she's up standing next to these tall, lean choristers, I was like, my God, she's a tiny person. She was a tiny lady.
I also don't know, and you probably don't know this either. So if anyone out there is listening to this and knows the answer to this question, or these questions, I should say, A, what are the ages of these characters supposed to be? And B, how much time actually passes?
Oh my God, I would love to know that.
I would love to, because Norman, the Norman nor Vicky, the character names,
Yeah.
look like they get older.
Yeah, so it can't be that much time.
Can't be that much time, but it also I think I saw that Judy was in her 30s when she filmed this.
Okay.
So
Yeah.
like Is she supposed to be playing a 30-year-old? Is she supposed to be playing like a young 21-year-old? Like, what
Yeah,
is?
yeah. How old is
I
she
just want
supposed
to
to be?
know.
Yeah.
It's just more curiosity than anything else. But are you ready to get in sharp and flat now? Let's do it.
Yes.
Let's do it then.
Sharp flat.
So in this section, we're going to highlight some moments, whether or not we talked about it. If we liked it, it's sharp. And if we didn't like it or thought it could change, it's flat. I want to start with flats because let's just get them out of the way. And I have a few of them. So,
Go.
and I'm going to read exactly what I wrote down. So buckle up, kids. I'm going to actually start from the end and go work or whatever. It doesn't matter. So my first flat is for Danny Maguire. He can go fuck himself.
Why?
And I wrote that
Why are you mad
when
at Danny?
I wrote that at the end of the movie when he yelled at her
Oh, right.
for
I
not
don't feel
for
sorry for you.
mourning.
You, bop, bop, bop. He like goes off on her. I'm like, you jerk.
You're a fucking asshole. And like I said, you can tell he had a crush on her from the get. So let her grieve, for fuck's sake.
Don't
Like
be an asshole.
they were they there was a whole announcement ready to go for like for this moment, you know, that the presenter has at the end where he's like, yeah, you know, Ms. Vicky Lester is supposed to be here, but we all understand why she's not. So fuck you, Danny. I
Yeah.
also am flatting toxic masculinity and her friend fragile male ego. That is literally what I wrote down. My next flat is, and this is what you were talking about. The inevitable racism slash cultural insensitivity that would be in the movie of Someone at Last. That's the one where she's traveling around the world and they're going to these different places and you're like you're about to see something, but because it's her in her living room, you don't really
Oof.
see the
She
full
puts on the
incense.
lampshade. I was like,
She put,
no.
I mean, she puts on a lampshade, which is bad, but like now
But what happens after?
just imagine what they would do on set to these
Yeah.
people.
And they probably tape her eyes down and make her look Asian, and you'd just be like, no, please don't do that.
In the same vein, I'm flatting at the beginning of the movie at the same showcase or whatever they're doing there, the variety show, the showgirls in the Native American headdresses. I want to flat those. Because, like, I get it. It seemed like they raided whatever costume storage that they had for both the beginning and the end. And they were like, you people, you're going to be clowns. You're going to be this. You're going to be that. Because there was so much random shit on those people. I was like, I don't understand what this is. And then my last flat that I saved for last, and this is the pin I'm taking out from the beginning of the episode. How the movie allows a man to go through a drug slash alcohol addiction, but in real life, they hated Judy for going through something similar because they did it to her. That's my flat.
Yeah, it's total hypocrisy. Absolutely.
So I guess
I
I'm flatting
completely.
the hypocrisy of this movie.
Yeah. I would start with my flat, which is kind of connected to that, which is I just hate the story. Meaning the idea that we're glorifying this male sacrifice. No, I shouldn't say sacrifice. That's not the right word. But the fact that he's, you know, so deep in his addiction and he wants to, you know, Judy justifies him by saying he wants to get clean. He just can't. And instead of being like, no, fucker, buckle up. Let's get you help. Let's like make it work. But I'm going to go on in my merry way and do my thing. Like, obviously, this is a movie of its time, of the 50s, when women were still subjugated and objects of, you know, owners, they're owned by their husbands and, you know, they couldn't have any kind of property in their own name and things like that. You know, if you're married, this really awful things that we've gotten over since, or
Well,
getting closer to getting over.
there you
But
go.
I absolutely just despise the fact that, as difficult as it is, like they don't obviously want him to be drunk on set. And yes, it destroys his career. But that the fact that it's almost like Esther slash
Vicky.
Vicky's career rises because of his downfall. I don't know what it is about that that bothers me. It's sort of
I don't think it is because
well, I
of
think
it.
I see, but that's what I'm saying. I think it is. For me, that the reason this story keeps getting retold is that one person goes down while the other goes up. That's always the version. It's
Right.
never changed. They never do a version where he's saved. And I think personally, as actor and as a creator, I hate that characters, or not hate, that's a very strong word. I don't mean hate, but I mean I don't enjoy as a viewer watching a character succumb to his own Achilles heel. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And I
Yeah.
am bothered by that. It bothers me because I want to see the character survive. That's just me, I think. I don't want to see him walk off into the ocean and never be seen again,
I
you know?
mean, I think that's it's interesting
Because
that he.
I think I'm responding to the notions that they want me to respond to. You know, I always say I don't, the only thing that's unforgivable in entertainment is boring. Don't bore me. Make me upset, make me do, let me feel the things. And this storyline, which we will revisit again, always gets me. It always gets me to this fucking God damn it.
Yes, but at least it's not boring.
It's not boring. That's my point. That it's it really gets to me, and I get angry, and I think about it, and it bothers me.
What's interesting about this version, I can't really speak about the other ones because I didn't rewatch the Janet one, and I'm
Oh,
saving
yeah, I haven't.
watching Barbara and Lady Gaga for when we do those. But
Yeah, I
what's
haven't seen the Barbara
interesting
one in a long time, and I'm excited to watch it.
is that it's his choice to commit suicide at the end. It's not like an accidental
Well, suicide
overdose.
is a choice, right? It's not, no one's forcing him to do that. Yeah.
Right, but there's the accidental overdose that I think happens in the original. I
Oh,
can't
is it?
remember.
Oh, is it?
I think or
Yikes.
it's because he hears that conversation between Vicky and Oliver or Libby, somebody,
Yeah,
Oliver,
somebody, whoever that is. I think it's all of them. Yeah.
where Oliver's like, you got to get back to work, Vicky. And she's like, no, I mean, it's him and blah, blah, blah.
And
And she
well,
has
she
battered.
says, I'm going to give up working for him. And that's when he's like, no, which
And
I
yeah, so
respect.
he sacrifices himself. And
That's my point.
I think this is the only version that does that. We'll put a pin in that when we do the other
Yeah, we'll see.
versions.
Yeah.
But okay, so every once in a while in this section, I have what I like to call a natural. It's neither a sharp nor a flop, but I still need to talk about it. I have two of them. My first one is for the Born in the Trunk medley. It is 15 minutes of this movie. I think it's just way too long, but I mean, it's still just so good.
Yeah,
It's good. And there's the problematic parts of it where she's singing a song that Al Jolson sang originally, and you're like, this isn't right.
well, and Jolson's
But
hanging in blackface.
yeah.
Yeah,
Oh, right. Yeah.
don't forget that.
But at least they had the forethought not to put her in blackface, but
Yeah.
still, that's not a win. And my other natural is for the costumes and Lose That Long Face,
Yes.
because I don't know what they're trying to tell me.
Yes, it's interesting because it's so, you're like, what is this? What do
Cause
you, what
like,
story is this? What are we doing? Yeah.
the set is gray. Everyone's in gray except for her and the two kids that are dancing with her. And then there are fruit throughout the set of
Right.
this that are in color, but like the barrels that they're in are gray, and the street's gray, and the buildings are gray, and she's carrying a gray newspaper and all that. So I'm like, are we doing a black and white movie? Like what? Cause this movie totes the line of like you're watching the movie, you're watching the movie within the movie versus you're watching the movie A Star Is Born.
And maybe
And
that was her
so
way of distinguishing, right? Maybe that was it, that they overly made it overly designy when you're in the movie within the movie. Because it is, it's very overly designed.
but so like I know when we watch Born in a Trunk, we're watching another movie within the movie. But with Lose That Long Face, I don't know what we're watching, because they do the first take of it, and then she has that breakdown in her dressing room where she wants to get Norman back into the business somehow, and then they are like, great, you have to
They
come
go back
back,
and finish it.
and now we're going to do close-ups.
You
I know we're
know?
watching the process, but are we watching the process?
It's just, yeah, it that again, I attributed to attributed the confusion I had in that sequence to maybe cuts that they made, that there's connective tissue that they got rid of, because I really was like lost at that point. I was like, what is happening right now?
So I'm only naturaling, if that's even a word, the costumes and set for that. For everyone. Fuck it, I'm gonna add a flat of Judy's costume in Not Lose That Long Face, because that is super racist. Let's get into sharps. So I think we can both agree Judy is a goddamn sh is the sharpest of all sharps.
Absolutely. She's so good in this movie.
She's so good. I also sharped the production stills being edited for the cutscenes. I thought it was great. Like I said, it made it weirdly meta, and I'm here for it. I also sharped how I felt that this was a grounded movie and it was grounded in reality and all that. I sharped mostly Judy's costume designs. Like there were a few dresses that I was like, "Ooh, you piqued my interest." The Oscars dress, the finale dress. Surprisingly, the one in the Born in the Trunk flashback, when it kind of looked like the Dorothy dress.
Oh yeah, like a suggestion of it, right?
There are a few other costume design moments that I was like, "Oh, that's so pretty."
I have to add one in that when she goes when she's singing the peanut song, and then they go sing, you know, Melancholy Baby, and then she finally sings Melancholy Baby.
Oh, the Melancholy Baby dress. Yes, that's
That
true.
gown,
That
woof
gown is
gown.
beautiful.
Good Lord, yeah.
I also sharped how sound was used in Here's What I'm Here For, where they have the microphone over their private conversation, but we, the audience, do not hear it.
I told you that's my favorite moment in the movie.
That
I don't know what it is about that. I just found it so
was so
ridiculously charming and clever.
smart. And then my last sharp is for The Man That Got Away.
Just in general.
Just in general, everything about it, everything about it was just so fucking good. What about you? What were your sharps?
So I have to say, just seconding the cost Judy's costumes, the costumes in general in this picture, everything that the women wear is fascinating, interesting. Sometimes it's problematic, but it's 90% of the time stunning. Like within just even the extras in the banquet scene, you know, the old ladies that are sitting on the table with her are dressed stunningly. I
The
absolutely,
bookend scenes of whatever that variety show is, stunning.
stunning, stunning. They're always, it's like woof. And also just the set designs of the sequence of them, you know, when they're on the sound stages, so it must be the movies within the movies, just stunning. It's always stunning. I absolutely adore that the Peanut song shows up in this movie because it is, my mother was Cuban. It is a Cuban song called, and it's actually the Peanut Vendor song. And it's a really great example of like sort of Afro-Cuban music that turned into like a popular song, because it was just like a street song that peanut vendors literally sang to call you to come buy the peanuts inside of a little, you know, cone of newspaper. And my mother would like knew the song. So when I was a little kid, I knew this song. And then all of a sudden it shows up in this movie. And I was like, but it's in English and that's weird.
I didn't mention, so all these songs are written by so many different people. For the most part, Harold Arlen and Ira Gershwin wrote the original songs for the movie. I should.
Did they say they did Gershwin write Man That Got Away? Is was that Harold Arlen? I don't remember.
Both of them. So both, they
They wrote
teamed
together.
up. They wrote Gotta Have Me Go With You, The Man That Got Away, Here's What I'm Here For, It's a New World, Someone at Last, and Lose That Long Face. The Born in a Trunk medley, every song is written by different people.
That's what I thought. Yeah, it's like an interpolated sequence. Okay, so I have to add, you know, obviously, I don't think I need to go over. Like, I love, you know, I would sharp every number Judy does is just a delight to watch. It is the reason we watch this picture. It is an, you know, hands down, everything is always stunning. She never fails to make me go, wow, like every number in some way. So I have to say the silly things that I enjoyed. So like I said, the Peanut song, and then the puppet. There's a puppet that's Judy's doing the voice
The
for,
commercial.
and for some reason, it just tickles me beyond all like reason. I don't know why. It's charming. She's beautiful. The puppet's beautiful. It's silly, you know. And I'm like, why is this here? But I love everything about it.
So there is a reason why Judy Garland, by the way, is doing it was attached to this movie, and it was because in the 40s there was a radio play version of A Star Is Born that she was Esther Vickie.
No.
Yeah. So she
I wonder
revived
if we can
it.
find it. I would love to listen to it.
Yeah, so it's interesting that I guess, and I think this may have been like before the drugs, or like during, before the drugs were a problem. Let's put it that way. So then, you know, another 10 years later,
Yeah.
she made the movie. So just to say, just to n drop another fun fact. Ha
And I think my last scene, we've talked about it, so I'm just gonna say it again though, is that damn scene when she's in the recording studio and Norman and her have the conversation when we can't hear.
So the same sharp I had of
I it
here's what
is
I'm here for.
my absolutely favorite moment in the movie. I know of all these splashy musical numbers because the cleverness of it and just how charming that whole scene plays out, and the fact that like it's so understated, and it speaks so much to their characters and who they are and like how they end up together. It's just I it's brilliant. It's a brilliant moment. So unique, so beautifully crafted.
Would you add any of the songs to your life's playlist?
Oh, most of them. They probably already are.
I wrote The Man That Got Away. Born in a Trunk will sound fine.
Yeah, I think that one you can just listen to and not be offended by.
And then It's a New World, which is the one
So,
that she sings. No, which one is that? I can't remember which one that was.
I've recently gotten into collecting vinyl. Like, I got an old record player at Goodwill for like $25, and when I tried it out at the Goodwill, it worked just fine. So I bought it, and I've collected a bunch of old records now, mainly because either I found them for like a dollar, or I get them free at different places. And I love that they have the pictures, and you open up the dust jacket, and it's like a book, and it's got all these photographs and information and whatnot. And so I found this series that were like old movie musicals sort of repackaged, and this Star Is Born is in one of them, and it's a two record set, and I've never listened to it. Simply because I kind of felt like I knew it, but I wanted it for the look of it, of the dust jacket, and for the other record, which I believe was like the pirate, I think. I can't remember now what came with it. And when I finished watching this movie, I literally remember that I had it and was so excited that I could listen to the vinyl, that I already had it. I didn't have to go find it.
It's a New World, by the way, is the one that she sings a cappella. That's why.
Yes, so good.
Yeah, where he
Yeah,
turns the music off and he's like, just sing it to me.
just sing it.
I have it for free. The
But
copyright.
it's such a delight to watch Judy, no matter what was going on in her personal life, to watch Judy be a slightly mature version of Dorothy and really give you a grown-up performance, musical, delightful, like seasoned, crafted performance that I
And she
just really enjoyed it.
she didn't attend the Academy Awards because she was a little busy having her son. So
Oh, she was oh.
yeah, so she didn't
Oh.
attend. But Roland, on that note, we
Here we
are
are.
done with the episode. Yay!
Yay, thank you.
What do you have to plug or promote?
We're still promoting our lovely Hell of a Boss season three appearance. I still don't know when it's dropping. I'm not even sure the show creator knows when it's dropping. I think she's working on it, and they do it as a whole season and drop it all at once
Oh,
on YouTube.
wow.
As far as I understand, that's what's happening. So as soon as I know more, I'll let you know. But there's things brewing. Just as you know, we can't talk about it until it's ready to talk about. But
Yeah, you gotta dot the
yeah,
I's and cross the T's and sign the
and they
contracts and
make
all
me
that.
sign things that say I can't talk about them until they're done.
Well, and if you have answers to questions that we had about the age or the year, or years, how long this movie takes place,
Oh,
I'd
yeah.
like to hear your thoughts on it.
Me
You can
too.
email me at buttersongpod@gmail.com. I'm also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at buttersongpod. Okay, so I don't want to ask this question right now. I think I'm going to
Okay.
wait until the last one. But for you, the listener, I don't want Roland to answer this one right now. And
Okay.
but I think I know the answer already. But for you, the listener, is this your version of A Star Is Born? I'd love to hear it. And if you want to be part of next episode's conversation, well, we are staying with Judy Garland, and we're going to be talking about Easter Parade.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Love
Roland,
it.
thank you
Thank
so
you.
much for coming back on. So inevitably, Roland will be doing the 76 version, I believe that's the year of Stars Born, and then we'll be doing the 2018 one at some point. So yay! Look out for those in the future. But Roland, thank you so much.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for making me watch this movie. Oh, I love it.
Right.
And listeners, thank you for listening, and bye for now.
Special thanks to Aaron Choi for creating the pod's artwork and to Nick Bombacino for composing the theme song and the jingles. A huge thank you to CastBox for hosting this podcast. And thank you again for tuning in to today's episode of Life's But a Song. Bye for now, everyone, and have a musical day.